morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, welcome to the Webster Style Magazine podcast, episode number 9. I'm going to be your host for today, Elzen Hawks, editor-in-chief of WebsterStyleMagazine.com. And I just want to thank you first and foremost, before we start our show, for dropping by, downloading the podcast, streaming the podcast. Even if this is your first time listening, thank you for all of your support. And you can find us at www.WebsterStyleMagazine.com or www.WebsterStyle.com. Find us on Twitter at WebsterStyle. Email us with any questions, any comments, so on and so forth at info@WebsterStyleMagazine.com. Or you can give us a call. Yes, you can call us. Leave us a message at 571-32-STYLE. Again, that's 571-32-STYLE. Who knows, we may include your question in a future podcast. Now, I watched the Oscars at the time of this recording. It's been a week, so by the time you hear this, it'll be a little over a week and a half ago. Primarily because there was nothing on besides Walking Dead, so you know that I paused the Oscars, watched Walking Dead, and then went back to the Oscars. And one of the things I noticed is that you saw a lot of prominent actors wearing beards. As someone who wears a beard themselves, as my little brother would say, I am blessed with facial hair. And I keep it very neatly groomed most of the year. It gets a little woolly every now and again because sometimes, you know, brothers, you just don't feel like it. You just go out the house and I'm like, eh, I don't care. But most of the time it's nice and neat and groomed. But usually beards are not looked upon as being a style that you wear when you're trying to be clean cut, when you're trying to be dapper. It's usually clean shaven sort of image that we portray of ourselves when we want to look that way. So it was really, really great for me and all of my other beard wearers out there to see people like Affleck and Clooney wear really nice, manicured, distinguished beards when they were accepting their awards in their tuxedos. It was really, really great to see someone who wears a beard. And just to let you know, guys, the beard is coming back, so don't be afraid to wear your beard. Now, Carl doesn't have a beard, but Carl is a very nice and a great gentleman we had a chance of sitting down with recently to talk about where his style comes from. Now, last podcast, Jason and I talked about where our personal styles have come from and why we dress the way that we dress. Well, I was able to sit down with Carl, an up-and-coming professional in the Washington, D.C. area, and he gave us a whole lot of insight into why he dresses the way he dresses, where that comes from, and what kind of image he is trying to project through the way he dresses. So we're going to talk to Carl, we're going to learn more about him and his style, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit of Kill Shakespeare. Yes, the guys that killed Shakespeare are back with a new miniseries, and I'm going to talk about it. So sit back, relax, listen, and I will see you soon.
Thank you. Okay, I tried to think of the question you asked about what influences your style, and three things immediately came to mind. In order of least to most to least, for me, I would say probably the image that you want to portray, that I want to portray, is probably what mostly influences my style. I'm a laid-back person, but I want to be considered image-wise as a professional. So you dress in a way that presents an image of professionalism, especially as African-American men. In my opinion, we have to dress a certain way and present a certain clean image to the world, because we're judged by not only what comes out of our mouth, but immediately what you look like. So my style, so to speak, is influenced greatly by the need to present a professional appearance at all times. And that image came in my history from, I think, would be, as you said, from my dad. You know, it was me and two other boys, and so he told us at an early age, you are a black man, you're going to automatically be judged differently by the way you look, so always dress in a certain way that presents yourself in a professional way. So that's how that happened, and I think that's mostly what influences my style. Two, I would say probably fit. I have an odd body frame. I have really long arms, but I'm really small here. I have big legs, but a small waist. So clothes, when I go to a rack to pull off clothes, or if I look online and see clothes on a website, while they may look good, they don't fit because they're not constructed for men. I don't think, this is my own opinion, for the average African-American man. Clothes are not designed in a way that fits off the rack. I can put on a pair of shirt, pants or shirt that fits me exactly as it should. Very, very rarely. Most clothes are fit in a European cut. So they're people with very small frames, very small necks, small legs, small butt. Most black folks, we are a little bit bigger than the average. Right. Even gloves. When I go to buy gloves, my hands are enormous. I can't find gloves that fit. So that would be one. The second. Third, I would say what most influences my style is advertising. If something is really well advertised, really put together, really polished, but I look at that ad and I can see myself, not just in the clothes, but in the person who's wearing them, that I'm most, but also I can see me wearing that to work, or I can see me going out in that. But if it's some person who, no matter what the outfit looks like, if I immediately associate that outfit with the model or whoever that's wearing it, it's unlikely that I'm gonna buy it. Because he would have to look like me. So those are the three. Fit, advertising, and then my image.
Okay. Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it. Great
sure.
Your time.
Absolutely. You need anything else? If you listen to it and you think you need some more meat to it, just let me know.
Okay. Thank you. And welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Carl. I hope it was an illuminating conversation to give you some insight into how one man dresses and both the cultural and personal significance of why he dresses the way he dresses and why he wears what he wears. So speaking of stylish gentlemen, we have had the opportunity to talk with Kill Shakespeare co-creator Connor McCurry a few times over the past couple of years, most recently at the Baltimore Comic Con this past September. And at that Comic Con, he gave us a hint that there was new Kill Shakespeare coming out. Now, if you followed the site over the past couple of years, you know that we've mentioned Kill Shakespeare a couple of times. I also do the Next Issue podcast with Dreaded Deuce and a couple other fellows. We've interviewed Connor a few times, and we've spoke about the high praises of the original series. Well, Kill Shakespeare is back in a new miniseries called The Tide of Blood, and it picks up directly where the original one left off. And I would say before picking up this series, definitely pick up the trades of the original series. Both of them on Amazon are very reasonably priced, and no, they're not paying me to say this. I'm just really a big fan of the series, and it's just excellent writing, excellent art, and it's just a really, really, really good story. These are probably some of the best depictions of Shakespeare's classic characters in a very different light and new light that I have probably ever seen in my short time on this planet. But The Tide of Blood picks up at the end or in the aftermath of the original series. You find Juliet, Hamlet, Othello, and Romeo, along with the rest of the band of characters, trying to figure out what to do under a constant worry that King Richard's forces may come back to stalk them again. And in the midst of this, Romeo has become a drunkard and is finding comfort in alcohol and prostitutes, dealing with the inadequacies of Hamlet being the Shadow King and Juliet choosing Hamlet over him. Romeo has real issues in this book, which is really great because the character depictions of these fictional characters are very, in many ways, realistic and down to earth, which is one of the reasons why I really love the writing. But Romeo, in his attempts to deal with everything, has been having dreams, and in these dreams you find Miranda. Miranda, who we find out once he encounters her in real life, is the daughter of Prospero, and the results of the first miniseries of Kill Shakespeare play into the new miniseries with that the wizard that they may have awoken may not have been Shakespeare at all, but may have been Prospero. And Prospero, by far, represents a greater threat than King Richard could ever dream to be. So you find this issue setting up our heroes to go on a quest to Prosperous Island with Miranda as their guide. So it seems as though this 5-issue miniseries may become a much darker tome than the original 12-issue miniseries, which is a good thing in my opinion. If you are familiar with Shakespeare's works range from comedy to tragedy and can be very dark and morbid and macabre in some aspects. So I'm very much looking forward to the remainder of the series being released, and you should definitely pick up Kill Shakespeare, both the trades of the original series and the first issue of the new series. You will not be disappointed. So I'm going to wrap this up here. Again, thank you for sitting through this podcast and listening and digesting to all the information and thoughts that has been traversed and communicated over the course of these few minutes that we've been together. Again, if you have any questions, comments, or what have you, feel free to email us at info@websterstylemagazine.com, tweet us at WebsterStyle, visit the website www.websterstylemagazine.com or websterstylemagazine.com, or telephone us at 571-32-STYLE. Again, that's 571-32-STYLE.